o'clock. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
John Harbaugh, you should be fired.
What, for losing two straight games? Yeah, you know what, I'll agree with that.
He lost two straight games, Josh. He lost the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
the mother of all mother games.
You had possibly one of the most talented receiving corps, defensive backs, defensive units in the NFL, and Andy Dalton.
You had all of that talent, and you lost, John Harbaugh.
No, wait, he had all of that talent and Andy Dalton, and he lost.
How dare he?
Actually, I don't want to slack Andy Dalton. You know, he has went to a couple Pro Bowls, right?
Yeah, but the thing is the Pro Bowl is pretty much his Super Bowl.
Yeah, a couple more Pro Bowls than one Joseph Vincent Flacco, who actually turned down a Pro Bowl invitation to be with his pregnant wife. You know what? Good for you, Joe.
How dare he?
I know, right?
He should have been playing catch with his receivers, getting acclimated with his team. Maybe then Harbaugh would have won.
Yeah, his team that doesn't exist because they are on different teams.
He is so selfish, Josh.
I know he's selfish. It's ridiculous. Being with your pregnant wife? How dare you?
Yeah, does this sound familiar? Oh, yeah, it was what Ravens fans were saying in the offseason.
Yeah, and look what happened.
Playing catch with your wide receivers. Give me a break.
I know. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even watch 1 minute of the Pro Bowl on Sunday. Not one.
I'm more honest with you. I didn't watch 1 second. I didn't watch 1 millisecond.
I did see Chris Berman's reaction on ESPN postgame. He just looked...
Okay, maybe then that would count. But we only watched Chris Berman's reaction as he was going into a segment. It was actually not postgame. It was during halftime. And he was like, we'll be back after this. And he's like rolling his eyes like... Ugh.
Perplexed disdain for the Pro Bowl.
I really don't want to be here.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell he looked like it was a big waste of time. He's going to talking about a glorified exhibition game.
This is supposed to be an exhibition.
Are we going Rocky IV here? Are we bringing back Drago? What are we doing?
Yeah, I would think about Drago. That was one of the more darker Rockies out there because they killed Apollo.
Yeah, I mean, but actually you did hear that they are coming out with a seventh installment of the Rocky franchise, going to be titled Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's going to be with Apollo Creed's grandson. I don't know how they're going to tie all that in, given the fact that the Apollo Creed character hasn't been used in a Rocky movie since 1986, I believe. So
yeah, and considering also when they were filming Rocky Balboa, or Rocky, quote-unquote, 6, there was a little bit of a dispute between Stallone and the guy who plays Apollo Creed, Carl Weathers. There was a dispute between them about having him in the movie, and it was like, Carl, your character is dead.
Yeah.
We killed off Adrian in this movie. How do you think we're going to feel about you that is already dead?
He was a central character in the first four movies, though, let's be honest.
Well, first two movies. Then he shows up in the third movie and just trains him. And then in the fourth movie, he dies at the beginning.
Yeah, and he was in fantastic shape, and he gets killed. I mean, that just seemed unrealistic.
The guy who had the punch that was equated to a shotgun shell, yeah. So, shotgun, everything, other formations. It is the offseason for the Baltimore Ravens, so we're going to be having part two of our Ravens offseason moves. And this is more to do with coaching changes. And spoiler alert, some changes have already happened.
And spoiler alert, not really a spoiler alert, but no secondary coach. Still no secondary coach for the Baltimore Ravens.
Who could it be? That's going to be the million-dollar question here on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. One question that may have been answered over the week, though, Dan Duquette, staying for now.
Yeah, and still no significant moves made via trade or off-season acquisition.
But they did sign two guys.
Yeah, they signed your boy and a guy who hits 180 sometimes.
But is somewhat clutch in the playoffs here with Mr. Ryan Flaherty.
Yeah, way to tease that, right?
And Bud Norris as well. I mean, come on.
Bud Norris is your boy.
That's not any type of a lack of a tease. Anybody who listens to this podcast knows that Bud Norris is my guy, and you made fun of me big time for saying that he was going to be my surprise all-star this year.
And he's a solid starting pitcher.
And behold, he put up all-star caliber numbers, just not in the win and loss column. That's what ultimately did him in.
And was admirable in the postseason.
Yeah, very admirable indeed in their big run towards getting swept by the Royals, but we're not going to think about that. Let's not think about how it ended, Josh. Let's think about everything that led up to it. It's like the Royal Rumble. I mean, it was good up until, right?
Right.
Right?
Right. Wrong.
It was right. Come on, man. That's whatever.
But we'll talk about the Royal Rumble, of course. Also, we got to do Super Bowl predictions. And also, me and Ray, for a short part of this show, we're going to play, imagine it, we're going to pretend to be the commissioner of the NFL. Not so much Roger Goodell, but we'll say Commissioner Atkinson and Commissioner Hall. What punishment would you hand down to the Patriots following the Super Bowl? You can't hand out a punishment right now, obviously. You still got to wait for the Super Bowl to come to a conclusion. Oh, by the way, after the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 49 and not so much Ravens news, Terrence Cody is officially going to be gone as a Baltimore Ravens member.
Called it.
Yeah, but it's not because, well, yeah, it is because he hasn't played much on the field, but because
it's because he sucked, A, and B, is because now he has to deal with animal cruelty issues.
Yeah, so not only is he a bad player, he could quite possibly be a scumbag,
He's
too.
He's a bad person.
Yeah, so, yeah, dealing with another Ravens offseason move that I'm sure the Ravens are going to want to brush to the side as quickly as humanly possible.
Boy, they just cannot avoid controversy even in the offseason. Wonder what's going to happen come February.
By the way, that's going to be another part of one of the four-part series of this Ravens talk. Part four, yep, spoiler alert, will be Ravens publicity. What the Ravens would need to do to improve their public image.
Yeah, and they need a little bit of an improvement after just the baffling decisions they made during the whole Ray Rice scandal. And that was like during our 2014 year in review, that was the dominant story for the Baltimore Ravens, and that was one thing that just continued to have legs and still kind of has to today. But we have legs here on the Baltimore Sports Free For All, which you can hear on
sfmsports.net.
And where's our Facebook page there, Mr. Hall?
The Baltimore Sports Free For All podcast.
And our Twitter feed
at @bsportsfree, the number for all.
And you have a blog that I have no idea what the name is, again.
Which will debut following Super Bowl 49. It will be called the Sunday Night Sports Delight on Blogger.
The Sunday Night Sports Delight?
Yeah.
Why does that sound sexual?
Well, I had to find a title, and I looked on Google, and nobody took the title, so they, boom, it's my own.
Got you. Well, there's definitely a double entendre there.
Well, that is what you know, theater of the mind, yeah, okay, whatever.
But here's the thing, though, Josh. It's rule 34 of the internet. If it exists, there is porn of it.
And you have knowledge of this how?
Because it's just common sense. If it exists, there's some type of, I mean, come on. Anything that is a movie, anything that can be made as an inanimate object becomes porn someday.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I really hope I don't have to change the title immediately. I have to do some Google research on this, but hey, if that's the case.
Sex sells, Josh.
Yeah, but my blog isn't really about sex. I mean, unless there's a fight that had Ronda Rousey in it, and one of the pictures that we post on the blog is Ronda Rousey in her infamous ESPN The Body picture. I mean, other than that's probably as far as it'll go.
I mean, technically, though, that's not sex, though. That's just her showing off her body.
Well, it is a sexual, there is a sexual tone behind it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just look at somebody who's in phenomenal and fantastic shape, and they just want to show it off.
Yeah, probably better shape than the both of us. Yeah.
Are you kidding? She's in much better shape than the both of us combined.
By the way, she's going to be in a movie this year. She's going to be in the new Entourage movie.
Yeah, I figured she was in the, what was that, the Expendables?
Yep, uh-huh, and she's going to fight Turtle in the Octagon.
Hmm.
Yep, and if Turtle survives Ronda Rousey for one round, he gets to go on a date with her.
Oh.
Yep, so that there's a spoiler in that movie, so yeah, you're welcome.
That's an interesting wager, but wager or not, the Baltimore Ravens have made some moves here, and since we've last joined you here on the Baltimore Sports Free For All, Gary Kubiak was immediately replaced. It was almost as if we announced his departure to the Denver Broncos, but John Harbaugh had somebody lined up, and it was one Mark Trestman, former coach of the Chicago Bears. I'm sensing a little bit of a pattern here, Josh. Former coach? Ring a bell to you?
Yeah, former coach. Cam Cameron was a former head coach and infamous offensive coordinator with Marty Schottenheimer, and then, of course, that didn't last long. Also, you had Jim Caldwell, who was a coach for the Indianapolis Colts. Also went to the Super Bowl with the Indianapolis Colts in years prior before he went to the Baltimore Ravens. Turns out he only lasted a year and a half with the Baltimore Ravens as the offensive coordinator, goes to Detroit Lions, the current head coach there. I'm trying to think who else. Yeah, it is kind of a trend, isn't it? Gary Kubiak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one right there that I wanted to really mention here, because we look at John Harbaugh's recent hires here under his staff and his coordinators that he has, and he's hired a lot of former coaches that have maybe floundered a little bit in their coaching careers but still make fantastic coordinators. Marty Morenweg is another person that comes to mind because he was another hire as quarterback's coach. You have Mark Trestman and Marty Morenweg. You mentioned before the show even began that could be the more underrated move is the Morenweg move, because the guy's got a pedigree. The guy's got a serious, serious pedigree. He worked under Mike Holmgren in Green Bay, and we all know who the quarterback was during that time, Mr. Favre. And he's got a good track record in terms of working with quarterbacks. This guy could very well be a very solid hire for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, when it comes to their old coaches, they hire old head coaches, and they seem to have short tenures here. But that's okay, because this is a organization that people want to come to work for.
Absolutely. And when you look at the coaching staff, the current offensive coaching staff, yes, you had Rick Dennison, who in his right is a respectable quarterbacks coach. He, of course, went along with Gary Kubiak to Denver to take an offensive position there.
Nice little promotion for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at the hires with Mark Trestman, even if you don't think Mark Trestman is a sexy hire because he had all the offensive talent in the world with Chicago and really didn't accomplish much with that unit, you still have a solid quarterback coach, former head coach, in Marty Morenweg, who has a good track record of working with quarterbacks such as Brett Favre, and also working with the Philadelphia Eagles with Donovan McNabb when he was in his prime, also with the San Francisco 49ers when Jeff Garcia was in his Pro Bowl days. I mean, yeah, you could say he's long tenured and he has, you know, quite the track record, maybe not so much as a head coach, because let's face it, I'm sure he would like to forget his years with the Detroit Lions.
I think anybody would like to forget those years.
He is still a solid assistant coach. And regardless what you think of Mark Trestman, again, you know, this is a guy who was solid as an offensive coordinator in the NFL before he went to the CFL and accomplished a couple Grey Cup victories there. And, you know, we don't know what the future holds for Mark Trestman. When people ask, how do you think Mark Trestman's going to do, you know what my answer is? To be determined. You know, same thing I said about Jim Caldwell, same thing I said about Cam Cameron, same thing I said about Gary Kubiak. You do not know what system these guys will implement going into 2015.
The only thing that you can say, though, is that Mark Trestman is very similar to Gary Kubiak, as in they're both laid-back guys. They don't have really the big-time outgoing personalities and the egos that you would think would clash with one John Harbaugh. And it really speaks volumes to John Harbaugh's coaching ability that he can have all of these veterans who have head coaching experience before, and he can bring them under his wing, and they don't have a whizzing match, so to speak, between each other, and there's no animosity between all these coaches. It's John Harbaugh has them all down packed, and with that, the Baltimore Ravens have shored up their offensive staff. There's still somebody on defense, though, that needs to be replaced. Steve Spagnuolo went to the Giants, as was predicted. And now they have a void to fill in a secondary coach. Any names have come up there? Well, serious names that have come up there, well, because I've heard Ed Reed being mentioned as a secondary coach.
Yeah, looking on the Twitter feed, of course, and looking on Google News, not so much updates as far as Ravens secondary coach is concerned, but I'm sure by the time this week ends, in conclusion of this episode of the Baltimore Sports Free for All, I'm sure the Ravens will have answered that question. But irregardless, yes, Ed Reed's name has come up, whether you want to take that serious or not. Raheem Morris, former Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach, his name has been brought up because in his own respective right, he has been a solid secondary coach his entire career.
Yeah, that is more of a realistic pick, and it's actually not a bad pick as well. I would like the hiring of Raheem Morris if it were to come here for Baltimore.
You can never have too many former head coaches on your staff to let the players, I guess you could say, let the information blend into their brain and just learn from these guys and learn the formations and learn the schemes. I just don't think that maybe adding a former player will be the answer to the Raven secondary issues.
It was to the wide receiver issues that they had with Bobby Engram.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bobby Engram made a huge impact as the Ravens wide receivers coach. You look at how many receivers, like look at Kamar Aiken, Who would have thought Carmar Aiken would have busted out on the scene in 2014? Who would have thought that Michael Campanaro would have made the contributions he had? And yes, Marlon Brown did fall off a bit in 2014, but he still had a little bit left to prove towards the end of the year. And even with Torrey Smith, starting off slow, he did end up having the lead, the team lead in touchdowns. So yep. Yeah, the former head coaches, former players, yeah, they do make a difference. But I'm not sure Ed Reed is the answer to the Ravens secondary coach woes.
Yeah, it's the sexy name that everybody wants. You might as well name Deion Sanders in there as well. If Ed Reed is a candidate for the secondary coach for the Baltimore Ravens, then Deion Sanders is also a viable candidate for secondary coach. I mean, come on. Raheem Morris is more of your realistic hire, but no, nobody's really come out of the woodwork, so to speak, in terms of rumors or where the Ravens are looking, because you heard that the Ravens were looking at, what was that one guy's name,
Adam Gase, yeah.
Adam Gase for offensive coordinator, and they end up getting Mark Trestman. Mark Trestman was supposed to interview for the Oakland Raiders job, but as soon as the Baltimore job came available, yeah, he takes Baltimore over Oakland. He takes the Ravens over the Raiders. Now, how would you think about that statement? That says a lot about the Oakland Raiders as well, considering that is a storied franchise and has been in the doldrums the last couple of years since they... The last decade since they lost in the Super Bowl to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where there was a little bit of a deflate issue there with Brad Johnson, as we heard this past week. Everybody all of a sudden coming out and saying, oh, yeah, this happens all the time. It's happened in the Super Bowl before, and people were surprised. Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. This is probably the only real discussion we're going to have about the deflate issue that has been deflating the coverage of the Super Bowl so far, and everybody's made their cute little puns, their little ball jokes, and everything else like that. Everybody's gotten it out of the way, so we decided it is a tired topic. We may touch on it maybe a little bit later.
We make sure that our footballs meet legal regulations before we start the show here, ladies and gentlemen.
We don't even use footballs.
I know.
We don't even pass one around while we're talking.
I just wanted to make a funny little joke there, but it wasn't funny.
For the longest time, you wanted a table on this podcast. I have provided a table, and we're sitting well across from each other. We look like now a real studio, a real radio show going on right here with a table in between us. We've got notes. We've got your MacBook Pro. I've got my Acer Aspire, my $600 computer. You've got your $3,000 computer.
$2,000 computer.
$2,000 computer.
Plus tax.
Plus tax. Good grief.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Well, it's a fantastic machine, don't get me wrong, but that's out of my price range.
Okay, but as long as this isn't the Spanish announce table, I think we're good.
Well, I mean, did you see how fast they put that together, though? They put back the Spanish announce table pretty quick in WWE.
Oh, the Royal Rumble, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, and any type of event, because the Spanish, they're used to it by now. The Spanish announce table always gets destroyed.
All right, but closing out this part two edition of the Ravens offseason, let me ask you this question here. If you had to pick a Ravens assistant coach, because I don't necessarily think John Harbaugh is going to be on the hot seat in 2015.
No.
Yeah.
Except for his Pro Bowl loss. Come on, man. You got to step your game up, Harbaugh. You had all that talent. Come on.
Yeah. Who do you see on the Ravens assistants, the coaching staff? If you look at the names, say, this guy could be in trouble if his unit doesn't improve.
Special teams.
Jerry Rosberg
at special teams.
Guy who's been there since John Harbaugh came into the NFL as a head coach.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, John Harbaugh is a special teams guy, so yeah, he would probably want a little bit of improvement.
Also, he's the assistant head coach as well, so that holds a lot of water for the Ravens. And if you're the assistant head coach and your unit, and you also have the title of special teams coordinator, you're still going to have a lot of work to, going to have a lot of work to improve, because Jacoby Jones is coming off of an off year. Justin Tucker, even though he still, kicked above league average, still had an underwhelming year as far as making 50-yard field goals goes.
I wouldn't say that. He only missed four, and those were the 50-yard-plus field goals. That's not too bad of a year for Justin Tucker. I'm not really focusing on the kicking game or the punting game as we see.
But it's the return game.
But it's decisions that are made during special teams play. Like, they had too many men on the field during a field goal. How does that happen?
You know what penalty always drives me nuts with returns, and I'm sure you'll agree with this? Blocking in the back.
Yeah, especially when it's not necessary.
I think, and this is not to insult pro football players' intelligence at all, because I'm sure they did their homework and they got to where they are because they studied the playbooks. But I always feel like that is something you learn when you play Pop Warner football.
It's the heat, it's the heat of the moment, Josh. You play with raw emotion on returns.
I know.
That's why they're trying to eliminate kick returns out of the football game, because people can get hurt, Josh.
Yeah.
We got to worry about them. We got to have the kickoffs from the 35-yard line instead of the 30-yard line and have touchbacks out the wazoo.
Yep, and part three, if we are going to have a preview of next week's episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, part three will include Ravens draft decisions. What position of need do the Ravens have to go for in the 2015 NFL draft? Me and Ray will, of course, will discuss that. We'll look at the prospects, some of the guys who have already announced entry into the NFL draft, and who could be the best fit for the Ravens if their name is called by Roger Goodell on that podium.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Dan Duquette staying in Baltimore.
He's staying at the podium.
For now.
Staying at the podium is Dan Duquette as a... Vice President of Baseball Operations.
For now.
For now. And let's touch into this a little bit, because it come out that Dan Duquette wanted the Toronto job. He wanted the Toronto job, and he basically wanted to leave Baltimore. Now that he is staying here for the 2015 season, as of right now, is he a lame duck Vice President? Because you have a job offer. You want to be able to go there. But your boss can't negotiate a way to sever you from your current contract. I mean, they wanted three top prospects. Here's the thing. Toronto wanted to negotiate with a lawyer.
Yeah.
And Peter Angelos. That's the one thing about Peter Angelos that people underestimate, is his negotiating power when somebody wants to tamper with the pawn, so to speak, for the Baltimore Orioles. Dan Duquette's under contract until 2017. And it was the Blue Jays who wanted to pursue Duquette, and Duquette wanted to go to the Blue Jays. And they were, like, courting him and going after him, like, sticking out their hand, saying, here, come to us. And Angelo's like, not so fast. Yeah. You are taking away a big piece of why we are the Baltimore Orioles and why we were successful the last 3 years. You need to give us something very, very special in return. We want three of your top prospects. And Toronto's like, whoa, okay, fine. MLB even stepped in for a little bit and said, you guys need to resolve this issue right now because it is toxic. It is very, very toxic. It was toxic to the whole atmosphere in Camden Yards, and people around Baltimore were very worried about losing their vice president of baseball operations, who has helped this team along with Buck Showalter, along with Andy McPhail putting the pieces in place, has allowed the Baltimore Orioles to come out of the doldrums of being one of the worst franchises in baseball and are now all of a sudden viable and playoff-worthy almost every year we see them now.
I do think people undermine Peter Angelos' negotiating tactics, especially when it comes to trades.
Especially for his age. I mean, come on, he's in his 80s right now. He's still, you know, got the mind of a fox when it comes to his lawyer abilities.
And I know people in Baltimore don't hold Peter Angelos in high regard, especially after 14 consecutive years of losing, and I don't blame them one bit. But, of course, Peter Angelos has been right in certain instances, for example, overpaying for certain players in free agency. And sticking with, I guess you want, if you want to credit Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter on this, sticking to a winning formula of trading established guys for guys with promise, give you an example, Eric Bedard was an established guy in his own right, got traded to Seattle for Chris Tillman, Adam Jones, and look what it did for the Orioles franchise moving forward.
An established douchebag as well.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, Eric Bedard, not a nice guy at all.
All right, well, and we also look at this.
Koji Urahara traded to the Texas Rangers for Chris Davis and Tommy Hunter, also key parts of the Orioles' success.
I think that was more of a McPhail move than it was an Angelos move.
Well,
but
McPhail also made the move with Adam Jones and Chris Tillman as well.
Angelos moves are more, this guy signed pending a physical, and then he ends up failing the physical. Well, quote-unquote, failing the physical. Yeah. Grant, he was right about Grant Balfour, though. Come on. We got to give credit where credit is due right there. It's highly fashionable to take a shot at Peter Angelos and say, oh, yeah, well, Peter Angelos is this and Peter Angelos is that.
You got to think, though, he didn't want to be the guy that said, I told you so, but I do recall in a certain article a couple years ago where Peter Angelos says, we're not going to be the kind of team that spends $200 million on a starting pitcher, and then you sign Ubaldo Jimenez, And Ubaldo Jimenez has a disappointing 2014. And, of course, Angels will come out and say, see, this is what I'm talking about, guys. This is what I'm talking about when you overpay for pitchers. Not saying Ubaldo's not going to have a rebound year in 2015. We certainly hope so.
I would hope so. I mean, it's not likely,
especially for $50 million.
I mean, considering that during the playoffs, it sounded like he had 1 foot out the door.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're going to have a disgruntled vice president of baseball operations for the foreseeable future in Baltimore. And I think this is bad timing for the Orioles, especially with your fan fest coming up in Baltimore. And Dan Duquette, of course, being a representative, being a public face of the Orioles, will have to make an appearance there. And I'm sure we're going to have to hear his side of the story of what happened. And I'm sure he will be as professional as possible in explaining his situation regarding wanting to go to Toronto to take the president of baseball operations position.
Do you see a raise coming in the future for one Dan Duquette if he's able to do well this season, despite the fact that he didn't get to go to Toronto and maybe court him into maybe not courting other teams again?
Well, let's see. His contract is up in 2018. He has, since he's been here, the Orioles have had winning years. Yes, if you want to credit Andy McPhail for making moves prior to those years, you can go right ahead and do that. But I digress. Duquette I'm referring to. I believe if the Orioles have one or two more straight winning years, yeah, I do think he has the right to earn a raise at his position, especially if there is no president of baseball operations position available for him.
Yeah, money heals all wounds and it will make you forget about other things that have been on your mind for a long time.
Yeah. So, also, what else happened in Orioles news? Oh, yeah.
Ryan Flaherty, and also my boy, Bud Norris.
Yeah.
They signed some deals here. They are going to be Orioles in 2015 and avoid arbitration.
Yeah, and Ryan Flaherty earned $1.075 million for 2015, which I still cringe about, even though I'm not saying he isn't worth that, because what player is worth $1 million anymore in Major League Baseball? Because you're going to have fans out there that say, you know, I'm a construction worker. I should make more money than these guys. True, you work a dangerous job and everything, but these guys are a part of a public franchise. They are part of a public
sports team. Hey, don't blame the guy. Blame economics and the way how that works out.
Well,
and
that
how
too,
we talk
absolutely.
About this. You don't like something, don't watch it, so to speak. Go on Twitter, go on Facebook, go on Instagram, write the meanest tweet you can think of, and get your friend Mark and you to stop watching. Anyway,
you want to throw in Royal Rumble talk while we're at it?
Oh, anyway, I want to talk about Ryan Flaherty there for a second, yeah. Because I'm donning a nickname for him, Mr. October,
Mr. 200 October. Oh,
well, not in October. He doesn't hit 200 in October because he actually did quite admirably in the playoffs. And Ryan Flaherty, say what you want about him, somebody in that clubhouse really, really likes him. They're giving him $1 million for the performance that he puts up throughout the year because, hey, I still remember what he did in the playoffs, and it was a remarkable thing to see. I'm like, hey, look at this Ryan Flaherty kid all of a sudden. Where was that all year?
Yeah, by the way, Ryan Flaherty in his postseason career in, 4 series played with the Orioles. He is 9-for-36 with a .982. 36 is the possible at-bats. But yeah, 9-for-32 with a .281 batting average, .361 on base percentage, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs in his postseason career.
Money. Mr. October. He's your clutch guy for October.
He will make you cringe the majority of the regular season, but there is nobody you want on your bench more than that guy.
Yes.
He's kind of like the David Freeze of the team. Freeze will have a disappointing year, but yeah, eventually he'll step up to the plate and he'll deliver. So, but big question though, what is Bud Norris going to do this year?
All-star game.
No.
All-star appearance.
No, shut it.
Come
on. It's not going to happen, Ray.
He had the numbers to do it last year, except for the wins and losses. He didn't really get the run support that he needed. But come on, Bud Norris is not as bad as you think he is. And really, I like the acquisition that was made. It was a trade that they made for him. And he's a pretty good, stable guy in terms of the starting rotation. Give Bud Norris credit.
15-8 with a 3.65 ERA in 2014. I don't think he's going to get better than that. That's his ceiling right now.
Well, he won't have maybe he won't have eight losses, Josh.
Now you're just pushing it, right?
Because a lot of those wins came in the second half, because in the first half, he didn't – I mean, his first half numbers in terms of wins and losses weren't sexy enough to get him an all-star berth, because he just started to get hot late. But then as soon as he got hot, then all of a sudden I wasn't so wrong now, Mr. Josh Hall.
I know. You just keep rubbing it in.
Going to find the archive in our archives. I'm going to find that clip of you just laughing in my face when I said Bud Norris was going to be my surprise all-star of 2014.
Can we just hold off on it until baseball season rolls around the
corner? Hey, we're in the offseason. We can do whatever we want to. We got time to fill.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
This Sunday, instead of the Pro Bowl, and when I say I didn't watch the Pro Bowl, I mean I did not even watch 1 second. Yes, post-game with Chris Berman rolling his eyes does not count. I was over Mr. Atkinson's house where we do our show, do our podcast, and he invited me over to watch the 2015 Royal Rumble pay-per-view.
Which is actually the first Royal Rumble I've watched since 2000 when Mae Young flashed everybody.
Oh, dude.
Dude, it just speaks to
you
my...
just turned away all of our listeners just bringing up that memory there.
Or maybe they're still grossed out and they're still listening to this and they're too grossed out.
They don't know who Mae Young is.
Well, anyway, that was the last Royal Rumble I watched. That's kind of speaking the testament to me as a wrestling fan, is that I've been a very casual wrestling fan the last couple of months, because prior to that, I didn't watch it at all since 2003. I kind of became disinterested when WCW and ECW folded.
And by the way, going back to that year, I think Ivory won that contest anyways. But
no, Mae Young won it.
No, but Ivory should have won it, though.
I mean, she should have, but it was Mae Young who won that contest.
By the way, Ivory, a.k.a. Lisa Moretti, is still beautiful to this day. Over 50 years old, too. Hard to believe that.
There's a lot of 50-year-old women that are still very, very beautiful because they take care of themselves throughout their life.
Yep, and I guess you can blame it on the new diet fads that are going on. Maybe some that are, you know, much more healthier to you. But anyway, getting back to the
2015 Royal Rumble.
2015 Royal Rumble, yes. So I was over at Ray's house watching his pay-per-view, and I got to say, I kind of got to his place in the midst of the Divas tag team match featuring the Bella Twins and Paige and Natalya.
It actually was a very good match.
Yep, good tag team match, but unfortunately, I can't really say the same for the rest of the Divas roster. If most of them had the talent those four did in the ring, we probably could have a credible tag team division with featuring the female wrestlers.
Okay, but then after that, it came to
the triple threat WWE World Heavyweight title match, which...
Match of the year candidate right there.
I gave that 5 stars right off the bat.
What is this, a pro wrestling blog now? You give everything 5 stars? Minus 5 stars!
I'm not going to say minus 5 stars, but it was a match of the year candidate. It was a high-impact match. It seemed like any move that they performed was a finisher. Heck, we saw new moves added from John Cena.
Yeah, a powerbomb. He did a powerbomb. That's something to be behold. But the highlight of that match was Seth Rollins doing a Macho Man-like, and he got some serious air behind this, a Macho Man-like elbow drop onto Brock Lesnar, former UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar.
Current WWE World Heavyweight Champion who only makes 6 appearances a year.
But he does a Macho Man-style elbow drop on the Spanish announce table.
Yes.
Okay, there really needs to be an angle in WWE where somebody on the Spanish announce table gets so ticked off about it and starts suing him for discrimination. It's like, I'm tired of getting our table destroyed, damn it.
Yeah, so you have that match going on, and you have all the aspects of the match, the highlights of the match. The highlight for me is just one person, Seth Rollins. You would have thought he would have been the odd man out in this match, but never have I seen somebody face off between two established stars and really stand out.
And especially since he's only been up in the ranks of the WWE for, what, like 3 years? And this is his first year in singles competition as a main eventer. I mean, yeah, that guy definitely went above and beyond for his stature. Was the match of the year candidate, no doubt about that. That Phoenix splash that he did was also amazing. It was like a 450 corkscrew that he did off the top rope. I mean, come on. It was that move was sick. We just got to say it right then and there. That move was sick. Not so sick, though, was the match after which was the big one that the pay-per-view is named. Should we still call them pay-per-views, even though it's more of a subscription-based thing now?
Subscription view?
Subscription view, the end-of-the-month-type headliner thingy. A pay-per-view just sounds more sexy. We've called it that for years.
Now, let's be fair to the match. It started off good.
It started off great, actually.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt's totally demolishing everybody in his path. We saw some surprise returns. Bubba Ray Dudley returned. The Boogeyman returned. Okay, we'll leave the Boogeyman out there. DDP returned.
Now, Bubba Ray Dudley could actually be a legitimate return, though, because he could make a final run.
Still in great shape.
Yeah, he could make a final run. He was pretty decent in singles competition in that other promotion that nobody wants to talk about. But it was all dampened when we saw that Curtis Axel was eliminated by Eric Rowan. Eric Rowan wasn't even in the match.
Yeah, but it was...
Axel got screwed.
Yeah, but it was a nice little moment there with the Wyatt family, and it added intrigue from the Philadelphia crowd, which played along to the whole angle, and of course...
And the crowd was awesome leading up to that, too.
And of course, Bray Wyatt eventually eliminated both Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. And lo and behold, by himself, guess who comes out? Daniel Bryan, the guy everyone thought was going to win.
I didn't think he was going to win.
Well, I didn't think he was going
to
win
either.
I
think a lot of people didn't think he was going to win. A lot of people wanted him to win because they wanted him in the Rumble last year and was snubbed out of it. And they were able to recover from that quite well. But at the same time, it happened again this year. He gets eliminated. And
10 minutes in.
He gets eliminated 10 minutes into the Rumble itself, and he... I mean, it was really quick. It was shocking in my book. I didn't expect it. The crowd turns on the match big time. But Josh, the match was salvageable. But you were marching out people after Bryan got eliminated. You were marching out Big E. You were marching out Kofi Kingston, Fandango.
Just a bunch of people that the crowd loathed immediately when they debuted.
They got zero reaction out of anybody here until it was Mizdow. Mizdow got a reaction.
Mizdow got a reaction. It kind of livened up the crowd. Dean Ambrose came out. Everyone got excited for that. Dolph Ziggler, the number 30 entrant, was in.
And it seemed like the boos were calming down and the we want refund chants and the BS chants were over. But then here it came. It was, at first, it was... Dolph Ziggler, who got eliminated by both Big Show
and
Kane.
Okay, can we talk about how they got eliminated? Because you have to agree, that just seemed like the most underwhelming eliminations of top guys that I've seen.
Yeah, because it was, you could say it was clean, because even though, yeah, it was Big Show and Kane teaming up on them, it was still clean, because that's what happens in a Royal Rumble pay-per-view match, is guys will team up and go after a guy, or these guys will do this. It's when somebody comes out of the back and, like, helps somebody win. That happened to the winner.
Yeah, but you gotta admit, though, seeing Dolph Ziggler and Dean Ambrose just get tossed over the top rope like meat or something in a butcher factory, that just did not look good at all. And that totally soured the crowd right there, because they automatically knew who was going to win the Rumble.
Yeah, after that, that's when the crowd really turned on the match. They turned on it when Bryan got eliminated, but then it came out to where when the other two fan favorites, Ambrose and Ziggler, got eliminated, they said, yeah, this sucks.
We're phoning it in.
Yeah, and the guy that would eventually win when he came out, he was booed like crazy, and he's a good guy.
I felt bad for him.
I felt bad for the guy myself, and... Then he wins with a little bit of assistance from his cousin, The Rock. And that was an obvious attempt by WWE to try to transfer some of Rock's popularity to Reigns and defuse the booings. Nope, it didn't work. And now they have to think, what do we do from here? Back to the drawing board. Philadelphia boos everything. Let's just be honest with that.
They booed Santa Claus.
They booed Santa Claus, and they booed The Rock.
Yeah. Roman Reigns, your 2015 Royal Rumble winner, I guess you could say, yeah, he is somewhat of a legitimate athlete. He has NFL experience, and yeah, he does have the look of a superstar that could main event. But to be honest with you, I do not think he's ready. Maybe he is ready to main event, but I do not think he's ready to hold the championship just yet.
Well, obviously, with the reaction from the crowd, he's not ready. I never thought I'd say this, but...
You kind of have to put an asterisk on the crowd, because they were kind of being a-holes, I guess you could say.
Well, I could kind of agree with that, but at the same time, it was...
On purpose, too.
Then the booking got a little weird after Bryan got eliminated, and you just started scratching your head, like, what are they doing here? They had to have known this was coming. What's going on here? And the whole Rusev angle, where he's under the ring the whole time, you thinking he would come in and get a surprise elimination? No, it was underwhelming. Like you said, the underwhelming eliminations of both Ziggler and Ambrose kind of hurts their character a little bit. Ambrose loses another main event.
Jeez, come on.
Got to go on the guy. And now you're thinking to yourself, huh, what are they doing from here?
Yeah.
I never thought I'd say this, but a Royal Rumble win could actually hurt, Roman Reigns' career.
Now, let me ask you this. How would you have booked it differently?
You want me to play fantasy booking here?
Yeah, real quick.
Really?
I would have done. You know what? I would have had Daniel Bryan come out as the 25th or 26th entrant.
Well, I don't know about that. I would have him like last a little bit. I would have him get eliminated anyway because you don't want him in the main event of WrestleMania 2 years in a row.
In his place where he originally entered, I would have had Dean Ambrose because Dean Ambrose still had unfinished business with Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, at that end, I would go with Dean Ambrose anyway to win the Rumble just because he's lost so many different main events. That would actually add a little bit of credibility to him, even though the guy is still over despite how many times he's lost.
I know.
That just goes to show you what Chris Jericho said. Wins and losses are irrelevant in the world of professional wrestling. Well, of course it is. It's a pre-scripted outcome.
So
it's all about how you work, and the guy is a fantastic worker. I hope that eventually he gets the push that he deserves.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So, moving on from the Royal Rumble, unless you got something else you want to say about it.
No, I was going to say this will probably be the last of wrestling talk before we get to WrestleMania 31, which will be at Levi's Stadium in San Francisco.
Well, this is the first time on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All that we've devoted an entire segment to professional wrestling.
What are you talking about? WrestleMania 30 last year.
Minus 5 stars. So, going on to the Terps, and I cannot believe we put wrestling before the Terps, who are doing quite well this year.
Well, man.
Both ladies and men. But do you want to talk about the ladies first, or do you want to talk about the men?
Because the men lost this past week and the ladies are still in a row, let's talk about the ladies. Let's give them some pub first.
They have won 11 in a row, Josh. They haven't lost since early December.
17-2. As of this year, number 5 in the country, the Maryland Lady Terps.
They handled Michigan State, as the men did, but they handled Michigan State by like 30 points. Breonna Jones continues to be lights out filthy. She's averaging a double-double every game. And that team has just got depth to them. They're ranked what? They're definitely ranked in the top 10 in terms of the coaches poll and the AP poll for women.
Well, they're number 5 in the nation right now.
Yeah, they're number 5 in the nation. They are undefeated. Undefeated, Josh, in the Big Ten. And unlike the men, well, they beat the Indiana Hoosiers, who are having a down year this year for women. They let them in that game a little bit, but they also led quite convincingly throughout that game. And it was a fun game to watch as well. Well, against the Indiana Hoosiers, Maryland women in the Big Ten, they have arrived. They are seem to be doing better right now than they did in the ACC last year, and it's a fun team. It's a fun product to watch this year, Josh, and we can actually watch it on TV now.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with the Maryland women. I mean, you look at what they accomplished as of recent. We could even go back to the Sunday matchup when they faced off against Indiana in Indiana. They defeated them 84-74, and you bring up Breonna Jones just having double-doubles. Yeah, in this game, she had 10 points and 14 rebounds. By the way, 10 of those were defensive, 4 of those were offensive, and we always say about offensive rebounds, they do help.
Yep, and you got to be able to send them home, too. You get that rebound in the paint, go ahead and send it home. Just go on home. Just go on home. Go home, ball. What are you doing?
Well, looking at the Maryland women's schedule coming up, and yeah, they still undefeated in the Big Ten, 8-0 in the Big Ten. Their next two games coming up for this week, they will be traveling to the Chrysler Center at Michigan, taking on the Michigan Wolverines, who are 13-6, 5-3 in the Big Ten. This could be either a good road test for the Lady Terps, or this just looks like a bad home outing for the Wolverines, depending on which one you would rather go with. I think the Maryland Lady Terps are going to oust them out completely. But I think they're going to have another test this coming Sunday on February 1st. Yep, Super Bowl Sunday. And yep, you can watch this game before Super Bowl Sunday, so no excuses.
No, I'm going to DVR it and watching during the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, this is a 4 o'clock game, so yeah, no excuse there. Lady Terps will be facing the number 20 Iowa Hawkeyes, which could be a good matchup, but then again, this game will be at the Xfinity Center. So maybe two more wins this week for the Lady Terps.
And then we talk about 13 in a row, lucky number 13 for the Maryland Terps. And Wow, what a season it's been so far for Terps basketball. And as we move on to the men right now, who lost to Indiana quite convincingly there.
Going from 13 to 16 in the nation right now, the men, the Maryland Terrapins.
Oh, come on, you're like downing on them, but hey, it was bound to happen sooner or later, Josh. The team's been on a hot streak. They play in the Big Ten. Yeah, the Big Ten is a monster basketball conference, as was the ACC. But at the same time, the Maryland men have exceeded expectations this year. They have exceeded expectations this year. They go to Indiana. They lose quite convincingly, and it was bound to happen sooner or later, Josh. Ups and downs are a part of the college basketball season. It's a long season getting to that wonderful tournament that is in March. You had to think that this was coming. And
By the way, they lost a three-point battle in that matchup as well.
Big time. It was a total opposite of the Michigan State game, where Melo Trimble was going off on the three-point line and had a better three-point shooting percentage than Michigan State had a better free throw percentage. Then it happened to Northwestern University, and they were playing this game at Xfinity Center. They had the home advantage. The crowd was into the game, and they were able to just barely squeaked that by, 68-67. They were losing bad at like halftime. It was 41-30 at halftime. They were able to come back and rebound and score 38 points in the second half, and it was a Des Wells tip-in pretty much at the last second that pulled Maryland ahead of Northwestern, 68-67. And it was a good rebound. Hopefully it makes them forget about that Indiana loss for the near future as they go to Ohio State and then they play Penn State later on.
Yeah, and you look at the comeback victory for the Terps, defeating Northwestern 68-67 at the Xfinity Center. We got to bring his name up once again, because the more games this kid plays, the more likely he's going to enter the NBA draft lottery coming up this year, is, of course, freshman guard Melo Trimble, who had an outstanding game. He had 27 points, 4 steals, 3 assists, and 2 rebounds in this matchup. 9-for-10 from the free throw line as well. This kid is solid, Ray. And yeah, you can look at other guys too. You can look at Des Wells, who had 17 points, by the way, had the game-clinching field goal that he made. So you look at these guys that the Mark Turgeon has set up. Granted, their three-point defense has kind of hindered in the last several games, in the last several Big Ten matchups. But at the end of the day, though, you're still sitting pretty with an 18-3 record. You are still 6-2 in the Big Ten. I mean, yeah, sure, you'd rather be 17. You'd rather be 19-2 if you would have handled business against Indiana. But then again, like we said before the show even started, it's a long season, and these kind of things do happen, especially in conference play.
Yep, we'll see if they turn it around against Ohio State, and then eventually it'll be Penn State. Indiana comes up again on February 11th, so that could be the deciding factor, the revenge match, as it's going to be at Xfinity Center at 9 p.m. Wednesday, February 11th. Be there or be square. Super Bowl Sunday, who do you got?
Super Bowl Sunday, that depends if the balls are properly inflated by league standards. Should they be? Will they be?
Yeah.
12.5 pounds of air. What is it? What are the measurements there for NFL footballs? 12.5 pounds per air pressure.
Yeah, and it was off by not even 1 PSI, and it was able to give them easier grip, so to speak. Look, everything that's been said about that's already been said. Who do you got in Super Bowl 49?
Depends on. I'm just kidding. I'm gonna go with the Seattle Seahawks. I think the Patriots are facing way too much scrutiny, especially leading into this game. You'll have media days coming up this week. They're going to be answering a lot of tough questions. And it just seems like the Seattle Seahawks are the more cool, calm, collected team. And I think once Tom Brady faces a stellar competitive defense in the Legion of Boom with Browner, with Sherman in the backfield, I just do not see Tom Brady getting that fourth ring. I think he's going to go 500 in his Super Bowl career.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that. Seattle just seems like it's going to be the superior team coming into the game. Yeah, New England's got that mighty explosive offense. Yes, they have Rob Gronkowski. Rob Gronkowski is the outlier to everybody. He's like the J.J. Watt on offense. But at the end of the day, they have had to deal with distractions with the whole deflate scandal. And Bill Belichick has to call press conferences instead of being in the media room.
All right, now let me ask you this. Let's play commissioner here for a second. Commissioner Atkinson, after this season is over, What punishment would you hand down to the Patriots?
Second offenders, start taking away some cap space.
Taking away cap space? Really? No draft picks?
I think maybe a draft pick or two, but at the same time, just take away a couple bit of cap space. It's the second offense. If this was their first offense, this really wouldn't be that big of a deal. But because it's the New England Patriots, because they still have the spy camera scandal going on, you see how I'm avoiding calling it what it normally they would call it? That's my two-minute rant, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But they had that going in the back burner. You can't help but think about the New England Patriots and not think about the spying scandal without thinking about the deflate scandal. Yeah, they've had to deal with much scrutiny this year. Or this week, actually. Yeah, I would just say a forfeiture of salary cap space would be a suitable punishment. You can't fine the guys. Fining doesn't do anything.
Forgive me to be like Sylvester Stallone and go over the top here, but I think my punishment would be much more harsh towards the New England Patriots. This is what I would do. They forfeit their first round and second round picks, fine $250,000, and Bill Belichick is suspended for the first six games of the season.
Wow.
Yep.
That is quite the harsh penalty for something that...
Lay down the law.
Oh, come on, people. Do you honestly think that the New England Patriots are the only team that does this? Or this is the only time this has happened?
They're the only team. Well, it's kind of like being on the highway and speeding. Look, we all admit we all speed on the highway. But if you get caught, you get caught. And yes, you can make the argument to the proper authorities and say, well, look, four other cars just passed by going faster than me. Well, nope, you got caught. Sorry. So, yeah, that is the life of the New England Patriots, just getting caught with certain instances. And, yeah, maybe other teams do deflate balls, which I just don't understand. Yeah, maybe you do grip the ball a little bit better.
Brad Johnson said he did it in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and didn't do much with his career other than that, other than be comparable to Trent Dilfer.
Yeah, and it wasn't Brad Johnson that won the Super Bowl. It was Dexter Jackson and Rondé Barber who won that Super Bowl.
Yep, and Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks and a bunch of other people from that Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense.
All right, let's go on to our two-minute rants here.
Who closed last time in the two-minute rants?
I can't remember. Let's just say since we're talking about the whole New England Patriots, I'll go first.
All right, go ahead.
Watergate. How I despise you so. Why is that? Why would I despise Watergate considering that it happened many, many years before I was born? It happened when my parents were my age. I just turned the tender age of 28, and it's something that I would see in the history books, but it's something that I haven't really browsed over in terms of I know it off the top of my head, like the Revolutionary War. I know it off the top of my head, like World War II. Watergate is just something that was a blurb in the history books when I was learning history. Yet, whenever there is some type of a scandal, some type of controversy, it gets named after Watergate. Spygate comes to mind for the New England Patriots. Deflategate, if you want to go with immediacy here. And this is not the only time that controversies are named after Gate. There are many other instances as well. And to me, it's really played out. I just want to vomit, like, you know, just air vomit. Do the Chris Berman rolling of the eyes during the Pro Bowl vomit whenever I hear something being called Gate. Can we step it up a little bit here in 2015 and not call controversies and scandals as Gates, so to speak? There's nothing involved with Gate. There was no... Nobody opened a gate in order to get to spy cameras. Nobody opened a gate in order to get to deflated footballs. The gate wasn't even prominent in these controversies. Can we just, for once, just think of something else to call it? I've seen on Deadspin, they've called it, instead of Deflategate, they've called it Balghazi, named after the Benghazi scandal that was going on a couple years ago with involving our president of the United States. Very sad situation right there. And I don't know. I just think maybe we should make these controversies original. Make them have their own name and stand out with their own version. So that way, in the test of time, they stand out just a little bit better above the rest.
Yeah, and we can just go ahead and call this Podcast Gate. I'm just kidding with you. I know you're getting tired of the whole gate scenario. It probably will never end, unfortunately, because, you know, most media outlets, they need a story. They need a headline. Snowmageddon, for example. Spygate.
Snow, my God.
Oh, my God.
I just put my hand on my face.
He's
right
face-palming. Theater of the mind here, folks. And speaking of theater, well, speaking of movie theaters, one of my favorite movies growing up, especially in the 90s, was a Robert De Niro directed film entitled A Bronx Tale. And in that movie, Robert De Niro played a character named Lorenzo, who had a quote that I believe stands out more so in real life than it would in any movie, where he said, "The saddest thing in life is wasted talent." And we can go down the list of many players who have been deemed wasted talent in their sports career and say, what could have been if this player would have kept on the straight and narrow? And one player that has been brought up as of recent is Cleveland Browns wide receiver, or maybe soon to be ex-Cleveland Browns wide receiver, Josh Gordon. You all remember Josh Gordon, right? He played for the Baylor Bears, is in his third season, 6'3", 225 pounds, just a straight-up beast of a wide receiver. First season in the NFL, had 805 yards with 5 touchdowns his rookie year. Second year, went to the Pro Bowl, led the league in receiving yards with 1,646 yards and 9 touchdowns. Went to the Pro Bowl. Then in 2014, just screwed up big time. Was arrested for driving under the influence and also missed a majority of the year. Pretty much missed the first 10-some-odd games of the NFL season in 2014. And towards the end of the season last year, was suspended for violating team rules. Well, Josh Gordon is in the news once again. He has been suspended for an entire NFL calendar year for testing positive for alcohol. If you are a guy that's trying to get on the straight and narrow and reprove yourself, not only to your NFL team, but to society, you would want to think that you would want to stray away from the demons that are hindering you. And whether Josh Gordon has demons that he's trying to overcome, known as addiction, or is just an idiot who wants to be reckless, remains to be seen. But all I know is this. Josh Gordon has all the talent in the world to be one of the greatest wide receivers in the NFL. And this is from years of watching divisional games facing the Ravens talking here. If he cannot see that, then we're going to have another case of wasted talent.
Yeah, a little bit there. The alcohol thing, I would say it's legal when you drink over the age of 21. When you're part of your agreement to come back and be reinstated to an employer is you have to lay off this stuff for a while.
Especially when you have had a driving under the influence on your record as well.
Yeah, so Josh Gordon, hopefully he can turn it around and we can see some more magic from this guy. Still a very young man, so it's not too late for him to turn it around.
23 years old.
And as long as he's got that talent, that potential for talent, somebody's going to pick him up later on down the road, so hopefully we can see this guy turn it around. We will turn it around next time. This wasn't a bad episode of the Baltimore Sports Free For All, but we always strive to get better here. So this is another edition of the
Baltimore
Sports.
It wasn't as bad as the Royal Rumble, though.
No. The match of the year, dude. Just think about that. Everybody likes to put emphasis on the negative.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's think about the positive here, okay?
Of course.
So this is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free For All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
We will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free For All.